Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Matt and Dwight Just Might, a podcast about two Midwest-based comedians that are trying to figure it out.
Figure it out.
That's all we're trying to do. We're not even trying to like really succeed. If we could just have the answer,
that's all we want.
We just want that knowledge on our deathbed of like, that was what it was all about.
That's what I should have been doing the whole time.
Yes, that'll be a great comfort to us in our final moments.
So we take our last breath.
Yes.
With the knowledge that we were so close.
Yeah, that's all it takes, man. We are trying to figure it out about comedy and life in general and everything in between. I am one of your hosts, Madalena Martin. With me as always is Dwight. Dwight, you got a comfy ass sweater on. I like that.
Yeah, baby. It finally dropped below 40 degrees, so we had to pull out the winter wear.
Nice.
Here in late November.
I know. Yeah.
I've been waiting, man. So,
I can see why it's very stylish.
You like that?
Yeah, I like it. It's classy. You know, it's like for those people not watching on the YouTube channel, just listening, it's kind of a heathered gray cardigan, but it's kind of a thick cardigan, kind of like somewhere between a cardigan and like one of those Irish sailor sweaters.
Irish sailor sweater.
Yeah.
That's what I searched in Google. I said I need to bunker down for it's like a writing sweater. I feel like a professor.
Okay.
I need like a wooden pipe
mm-hmm.
and just like an old school typewriter.
Uh-huh.
So I can get these bits off in the winter when I'm snowed in.
Uh-huh.
That's what I'm going for.
All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. Sure. That's...
No Irish drunken sailor, but
okay. I didn't say drunken. Wow. Look at the racism coming out now immediately. Ooh. Immediately because he's a sailor, he's drunk.
Yeah. Irish sailor. We could have left the drunk part out. Hey everybody, how you doing? Hope you haven't turned this off yet. Matt, how was your Thanksgiving week? Did you do anything of note?
It was very chill. In years past, Denise and I've had up to 4 days of Thanksgiving, 4 different Thanksgivings that we've had to go to, which is a lot. And we would say too much Thanksgiving. This year we had two and I wound up only going to one. I had a family emergency again with my brother, so I couldn't go to the Sunday one, but it was super chill. Like our Thanksgiving didn't even start till Saturday.
Oh shit.
Yeah. So on Thanksgiving, I think we had Taco Bell. I'm mistaken, you know, like we were just like, I don't really feel like cooking. Let's
That's
go.
That's amazing. Yeah, as I lose my ring light.
Yeah, I was going to say you have such a reaction.
I was so shocked
by
Taco Bell. I knocked over my entire podcast setup.
There you go. Yeah.
I reacted to that like you were on Def Comedy Jam and I was in the audience and you made fun of my shirt.
Uh-huh. Made fun of your sweater that you were wearing?
Yeah.
What, you some kind of drunken Irish sailor?
Go on, man. Move on to somebody else. Go on with your little jokes, man.
Yeah.
Taco Bell on Thanksgiving. Did they do like turkey chalupas for the big day?
Nah, I think we just kept it real, real basic. I think we just went with the Taco Supremes, baby. Okay. You know? Yeah.
I dig it.
Yeah, I don't watch the movie or something. I don't know. It was very chill. What about you? What was your Thanksgivings like?
It was also pretty chill. We didn't have to travel. We usually at least, I think every other year we go to Wisconsin or Chicago to see Megan's family. She has family in both places and we just stayed here and we did Thanksgiving with my family. And then we hosted Megan's family on Saturday. So too much food, like both families just cook way too much. And everyone eats and then everyone's like, take all this food with you. Especially on Thursday, we're like, we're making a whole nother feast.
Meal, yeah.
So I've been eating turkey for 7 days straight, it feels like.
Good.
Like turkey sandwiches, getting loose with it, man. We made a turkey soup last night, turkey and dumplings.
Okay.
Like Bubba Gump out here with turkey.
Have you made the turkey chalupa that you just said? Is that on your mind?
I'm getting desperate. There you go. I still got a pound and a half of turkey left.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's a lot. I've not even looked in our fridge because I didn't get to go to the Sunday one, but Denise did. And she just told me that there is food that we have a bunch in there because I just got back home late last night after dinner time. So after we get done podcasting, I'm going to go and have my first official Thanksgiving leftovers meal. I'm very excited about that. But yeah, so that was it. Both of us were off. You didn't do any shows this weekend, did you?
I did not do any shows, which is, it felt good. It felt good.
Yeah.
Not to, there has been like, because Thanksgiving is always on a Thursday. There have been years where I'm like, all right, let's fit in a Friday and Saturday show.
Yeah.
Those are typically pretty good shows.
Yeah.
But decided to take this year off, which was really relaxing. And I was happy about it. So you kind of did the same thing, right?
I did the same thing. Yeah. But you're right. Those, the weekend after Thanksgiving, it's one of the few holiday weekends where the shows are usually pretty good, because it's not like Christmas. And you know, like, it's just one of those things where, whatever reason, people are in, they've already done the big thing on Thursday, but they flew in and they're looking for things to do. They want to get away from their family or, you know, whatever. I've featured at Helium on Thanksgiving weekend for Brent Terhune before. And it was like a huge, those are big shows.
Right.
Not only do we have Thanksgiving families in coming in to see the show, but we also had people that were in to see the Colts game that weekend. That we're looking for something to do. I can't remember if it was after the game or like the night before the game, but they were just like looking for something to do. And so it was a good one. I've actually thought, I'm going to ask Jared if I can have Thanksgiving weekend next year. I'm doing the Comedy Attic, for New Year's this year.
Oh, nice.
And you know, he rotates that. I'm not going to do it every time. It's been probably like 5 or 6 years since I've done the New Year's. I might just ask him, can I just always do Thanksgiving weekend?
Right.
And just do it like a homecoming-y type thing, even though it's not my home. But, you know, like, I guess it is now. I've lived here since 99, but, you know.
Homecoming from the, visiting team.
Yeah. So, but I mean, I've lived here longer than I've lived anywhere else. So it's homecoming for me. But, you know, but just maybe that could be something, because the club was completely dark this weekend.
Right.
Because, you know, hotels, of course, are crazy expensive on the holiday weekend. And so trying to bring in a headliner and knowing whether or not everybody's going to come out, I think he just was like, we're not going to do it.
Right.
So, yeah, man, I might hit him up and do that. I think that's a good strategy. What do you think? Do you think it's a good strategy to go for that?
I think so. I think on several fronts, like we just said, like, it's nice not to have to travel. If you can stay home, make a little bit of money, and also have the potential of really good crowds.
Yeah.
It's a nice stand-in. It's better than like trying to, I don't know, some of the summer months in Bloomington can be real rough.
Yeah.
So, you know, and around like last year, no, maybe it was 2 years ago, right after the festival, I featured for Stuart Huff, who always sells out, and it was just light.
Yeah.
It's just like those months in the middle of the year can be real tough. So I think you leave yourself a lot of leeway. How are the New Year's shows? Are they pretty
good? They've been good in the years past. I've headlined it once, I think, maybe twice, maybe just one, I can't remember. But I've also like featured on it before for other people. They're usually fun. They do it up really nice. You know, they deck out the club, you know, and it's fun, and everybody gets dressed up, you know, it's a good time. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to this one. This one, I got Shan DeSong and Joey Cerrone on the weekend with me.
Nice.
So I'm trying to talk Joey into dressing up like Baby New Year, and I can be old man time, you know, and the Shanda will just be like a regular human being, I guess. is there a third character in that?
I don't believe so.
I don't think so. Yeah. Yeah. So
come as is, Shanda. Welcome to the party. No costume for you.
No costume needed.
Speaking of Bloomington comics, Neil Meyer just sent me his Spotify Wrapped podcast playlist, and we were number 3 for the year on his Spotify. I mean, man.
Oof. Why only number 3, Neil? Neil, what do we got to do? What do we have to do?
We'll probably have to release
to overtake Joe Rogan podcast and the Shane Gillis podcast. Oh, Neil's just super mad right now that I painted him as one of those bros. I am curious, what were his 1 and 2 podcasts? Who are we trailing behind? Is it a wrestling? I'm going to guess, is it a wrestling podcast?
I think it's like a true crime podcast.
Yeah. You can't compete with true crime. Yeah.
You cannot. Like, and also we probably would have edged out his other ones if we released the full year of episodes so far, which we have not. So
we've not. Okay. So like, let's start making the excuses already.
Less episodes than everybody else.
I mean, really, that was, you know, we got big demerits on that. And, you know, only one episode a week as opposed to, you know, two or three times a week. Yeah.
Would you be able to mentally hold up to that radio broadcasting type of schedule 5 days a week?
Man, I guess it becomes normal, you know, if you're doing the thing like our friends that are on the Bob and Tom show, or, you know, a good example is like Mary Santora, where she's like the third chair for that very popular radio show in Cleveland. She's talked about it. Other people that have got that spot have talked about it. It's great because they just go in and they react. They don't have to do any homework. They're not bringing in stories. They're just there to be a third voice. That I think I could do.
Yeah.
But if I was having to do full prep, and be leading it, if I, you know, be Tom of the Bob and Tom show and like leading the ship and like being the main guy for, because they're on there for like 5 hours too.
They are.
Every day.
And a little behind the curtain as a writer for that show, we have our deadlines due at 2 a.m. So they, I think he gets them around like all the jokes from all the prompts. So he gets, I think he gets them around 3:30. So that's another hour and a half of just like going through jokes
and picking which ones
he's going to like tee up and then preparing for guests, because a guest comes in or two guests come in and then they have specific prompts that they want to get into. So it's just like outrageous amount of daily preparation that he's been doing for decades. And that's what I admire most about him is that, like, knowing the work that goes into it. I don't think I'm built for that, like, long-term.
No, let me be Josh Arnold. Let me be Mary Santora, where I just show up. I got a good on-radio laugh. You know, I'm ready to go. You know, I'll bring it out even when I don't feel like laughing. I'll drop it after every joke.
Hell yeah, man. That's what made Bob and Tom famous. Those fake laughs.
Yeah.
And truckers all across America driving at 7 a.m. Like, this shit's funny as hell. I'm a buy a shirt at the next Love's truck stop of the cartoon characters Bob and Tom.
I will say this, as someone, you know, who grew up listening to the Bob and Tom show somewhat, it was carried on a Louisville station, which is the closest city to where I grew up. And so I would hear it sometimes. There were bits I remember from my childhood of like also listening to like Dr. Demento and stuff that were on par with things that I heard on Dr. Demento, that like pre-sketched bits.
Yeah.
Or they would bring in someone like, they would have someone like, who's the toast guy? What's his name? But they would have like a musical comedian on that would do a bit that was very funny. Obviously, it was out of their act. It was not, you know, but
that's
what
I found out about Weird Al.
Oh, on
Bob and Tom.
Bob and Tom, really? Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Okay, that's that's great.
They,
so,
I mean, when he toured, they would have every comic touring through like on that show. So
yeah. I know it's not in vogue to be into it as like, you know, we're an intellectual comedian and we don't, but it has put comedians in front of thousands of ears or hundreds of thousands of ears, you know, at their height when they're like massively popular, you know, every morning, Monday through Friday for 30 years, 40 years, whatever it's been running now. So it's foundational. And I will say that when I got on Bob and Tom for the first time, that's when I was officially a for real comedian to a lot of my relatives, like my aunts, seriously, my aunts and uncles and stuff who still listen to the show all the time.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're like a real comic because you're on this big thing that we listen to.
Right.
You know, it's like their version of me being on The Tonight Show, you know.
For sure. For sure. Do you ever get in your head about that? Like people's perception versus what you've actually done? Like, what is it that's going to make people believe that you're fucking good at this? Like, people will comment on my videos like, oh, I've got to come see a show. It's like, I've known you since high school. Like, how, like, what do you want to see? I still think it's like, for a lot of people, it's like, oh, you have to have like that national TV credit, or you got to be in a movie, or like making it to the civilian, if you will, to sound like a psychopath, making it to a person that doesn't do stand-up.
A normie.
Making it to a Bob and Tom listener is different than what I perceive making it as. What is that like goalpost now? Because it used to be like, if you get late night, then you're automatically made. I don't even know what it is now.
Well, I think that it's, I think that even something like being on Late Night or Comedy Central to the average layperson still isn't enough. Like yeah. they, you have to be, there's a certain amount of the population that aren't into comedy. They don't go to comedy all the time. They don't even go to comedy hardly ever. Maybe once a year, they might get dragged to the local comedy show. Mm-hmm. You have to be Kevin Hart. You yeah. have to be a Netflix special, multiple Netflix specials. You have to be like just ubiquitous. You have to be all over everything presented as a comic, right?
Yeah.
You have to be Kevin Hart. You have to be Chappelle. You have to be the blue collar comedy guys, mm-hmm. you know, Sarah Silverman, you get your own show, you know, like things right. like that. There's a section of the population. Cause we both know comics that have got Conan and got like Comedy Central stuff I've got. And they still run into people who are like, oh, but what's your day job?
Yeah. What do you do?
You know, oh, what do you do? Like,
how's that little comedy thing going? Only yeah. asking because I'm sure this happened across tables all over Thanksgiving weekend to people actually trying to do comedy or like really yeah. doing it, getting paid yeah. to do it. So how's that little comedy thing going? You ever get
did
that
it
one
happen?
That little comedy thing?
Little comedy thing. I think I got it early on. And then once you stab somebody with a fork once, it sends a message to the rest of the family, you know? I was like, I'm going to put this in my little skits. I'm going to put this in my skit. This, me stabbing you in the hand with my fork, that's going to go in my skit.
yeah, it do be like that sometimes. I didn't get it this weekend, but yeah. I recently someone asked me why I lived in Indiana after a show. And they meant it as a compliment.
Yeah.
It's like this thing that happens to Midwestern comics where it's like you almost are looked down upon for living in the Midwest. I think that's probably just a not only related to comedy, but just Midwest in general. It's like everybody yeah. that lives here is shipwrecked and they yeah. don't know that they can leave. It's like, I like it. I yeah. like it. I don't want to move back to a place where I have to work at something else. I don't want like yes. a challenge right now.
Well, and also like, yeah, that every day is a struggle. Like the thing with New York is regardless of what you do in New York, regardless of what your job is, every day you step foot out your door.
Yeah.
It's hard, man. It's like, you're like, I gotta be like, here I go. You know, yep. I'm gonna do the thing. And yep. you just don't have that here. Yeah. I think there's also the thing, not just in comedy, but I think any entertainment thing, people just, again, the same sort of like group of like people that aren't plugged in, they're not listening to comedy podcasts like ours, which should definitely be higher than number three on your I'm just kidding, Neil. I think people that aren't actively into comedy that are more passive, they also think like, oh, you have to be in LA to do that, or New York. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. But why do you live here when right. you have to? They don't understand that you don't have to do that anymore. You
know? Right. That's what, like, you used to see people use the coast as a credit, like their main credit.
Yeah.
In from New York.
Yeah.
And it's like that. I guess that means something to people. They're like, oh, big city.
Yeah.
Coming to the 14th largest city in the nation.
Yeah,
it's just like it's frustrating. If you live in the Midwest and do comedy, you can yeah. make a living more so, I think, than yeah. the average comic doing it in New York or LA.
Well, we're proof of that. We're proof that you can make a living, own a home, you know, have a life, and not have a yard and not be particularly successful at comedy. Like yeah. you know, like you can, you know. You because the cost of living and everything is so much cheaper and blah blah blah, but I mean it really is. It's just the line and the ceiling to making it to professional comedian, paying your bills, making a living, putting money in the bank, savings, mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff is just so much lower here, obviously, than mm-hmm. New York or LA, where the cost of living is so much higher and the competition is so much greater.
Yeah.
You know, if we had the same amount of comics in Indianapolis, you know, in Indiana, trying to do comedy or doing comedy that are in New York City doing it, you and I would have a lot leaner calendars because there'd just be a mm-hmm. lot more people at our same level or above us taking those gigs from us.
Yep.
You know, so it's also that, like, so really what this whole thing, to sum it up, if you are listening to this podcast and you are a comedian, please move to New York or LA because Dwight and I do not need the competition.
We hungry, dog.
Yeah. Like, do not take our gigs. Go, go. You know,
you want to get stabbed with a fork?
Exactly. We take it. That's just for Thanksgiving. That's year round. This fork goes year round, baby.
Please leave us a review, rate and subscribe,
and leave.
Or catch these prongs, dog.
You talk about like people using being from the coast as a credit. I don't think I've seen that as much anymore. You still see it every now and then, and usually gets lampooned pretty big. I did just hear someone that was a comic in the UK who was coming to America, and a booker booked them for a don't tell. And after we're like, yeah, I think we kind of got took. Like when they showed up, they're like, they were not particularly strong as a headliner, but we're just like, oh, they're on tour from the UK. That's got to be something, you know.
Yeah.
I was on a panel one time, and I may have discussed this already on the podcast. If I did, I apologize. But I was on a panel for industry panel for the Motor City Comedy Festival in Detroit. And the other one of the other people on there was John Tobin from John Tobin Presents. He's a booker, books all kinds of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And he said in this panel and made my day, where he said, being from LA or New York is not a credit.
Yeah.
And he's like, and at this point with what's happening, being from Austin, Texas is an anti-credit. He's like, if you are from Austin, Texas, he's like, try to keep that a secret.
Yeah, don't tell nobody that.
He's like, because the people that are using Austin, Texas as a credit right now, he's like, are the worst of the worst. He's like, you know,
right.
He's like, Joe Rogan moved there and opened his club, and the bottom 20% of every comedy scene moved to Austin,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so, so just don't think that you're from somewhere means anything.
Yeah, like almost leave it out of your bio. Like no one really cares. Like no one really cares. Like if you... I get needing words to fill a paragraph if you don't mm-hmm. have a lot of stuff, and then you can, you know, but you know, that stuff needs to fall by the wayside as you continue to do more stuff. Like,
yes, as you get actual credits, you move that bullshit stuff out of your bio. You don't leave it in. Yeah.
You don't go, hey, I was on an episode of Good Bones on HGTV. You don't put that first in your bio. One time I was in the studio audience for David Letterman. And he said, hey to me.
You were on camera. That counts as appearing on Letterman, and you should use it.
Do you think I can book my don't tells with that credit specifically?
Uh-huh. Sure. Yeah.
Since people are not watching tapes anymore.
I know. Exactly. How about this? How about you're like, here's how you spin that Letterman thing. It's like, oh, anybody could do crowd work from the stage. I was doing crowd work as the crowd. And I was doing that shit years ago, man.
Comedian destroys David Letterman from his chair.
Yeah.
God.
On the bio chip, it is rough when you don't have any real credits or anything, but like, don't make shit up. And like, it's just tough. And also, like, you probably don't need a bio until you're starting to get things. Like, it's just like the whole idea of a bio is, I mean, really, they only use that for the headliners. Most places mm-hmm. that even use them for promo, it's only for the headliner. So if you are just trying to get in your foot in the door and open someplace, you don't need to have a bio, you know?
Right.
You can tell them, like, I've been doing comedy for 5 years and I won this contest, or whatever small things you had to kind of try to sell yourself enough that they're going to look at that clip. But yeah, it does remind me of some of the worst bios I've ever seen. I've seen some wild shit in some bios.
You don't need to be funny in your bio.
Yeah.
Like, it's save those brain cells for the stage. Everybody's going to be all right, man. I think it's a funny thing to how much we focus on the things that ultimately don't matter that much.
Yeah.
The reason I brought up the quote unquote success thing is because it's a part of our larger conversation of, like, when we're trying to set goals going into the new year, what does that mean for you instead of what does that look like in the grand scheme of comedy? It's very important to differentiate those two things. How do I get to the point that I want to be for myself, for my career, in a actual reachable way? Mm-hmm. Like, everybody wants to set a goal. Like, I want 1 million followers on Instagram.
Yeah.
Well, then you want to become a social media manager. You mm-hmm. don't really want, like, what's that have to do with your comedy?
Right.
Now, does that tie into, I want to grow my audience? Of course, we all want to do that. So
mm-hmm.
Be specific with goal setting and, like, reach out and ask questions as I'm like going through my year, the year that I had. I had a very good year, did a lot of shit. And now I'm at the point where I'm trying to see how I leverage this year into a better next year. So that's just been on top of my mind. So a little goal setting wisdom, if you will, from your boy.
Well, I think this would be an excellent challenge for the podcast, not just for you and I, but then also for the listeners. You know, we can try to verbalize, write out like what are our goals for next year. So how are you talking about, you're trying to leverage this good year you went back, which I think is an excellent first step. Look at what you did this year. Mm-hmm. Try to look at it objectively, you know, because I think a lot of comics fall into the, oh, I didn't do anything, or beat themselves up, or these shows didn't really matter, you know, but like you try to be objective about it. Like, did you do a bunch of shows? Did you get into new rooms that you hadn't played before? You know, did you move up? Were you hosting and now you got to feature someplace? Be, you know, but on the other hand, don't be the other kind of comic is just like, I killed it, because you did, you know, you did two more open mics this year than you usually do, or, you know, just be realistic about it. But yeah, so I think that's step one is like, you know, list three things that you did this past year that were positive steps in your career.
Mm-hmm.
And then list three things that you want to accomplish next year that are realistic and that are, you know, based off of what happened this year. I think this is an excellent challenge for everyone out there too. People listening, please send in, you know, your list to us and we'll talk about them on an episode. We'll talk about ours and then we'll give it a week or two, because this is a good end of the year. It'd be a good end of the year thing to do.
Yeah.
So we'll remind you next week of this challenge as well. But just really think about it and then send in your list of three things that you accomplished this year that you're proud of and three things that you want to accomplish in 2024 in comedy. And we'll read those on the air. You can send those to our Gmail account, which is mattanddwight@gmail.com, mattanddwight@gmail.com. And that is also where you can send general questions for the podcast. And we do have a question of the week. Are we ready for it? Should we jump in?
Plug those dates real quick.
Okay. Yeah. We don't want to wait till the very end. Yeah.
Yeah. Plug those dates real quick. Now that we got a hook and we gave the homework.
Yes. you going to go first? You want me to go first?
I'll go first. So this weekend, December 1st and 2nd, I am at Helium in Indianapolis, the Upstairs Room. I'm featuring for Andrea Jin, four shows Friday and Saturday. And I also want to plug on Monday, December 4th, before next week's episode comes out, I will be at Union Brewing in Carmel. Excellent lineup. It's a fun show. It's free. So if you're around, come to a show. I'm around. DwightSimmons.com.
Yeah. He around.
I get around.
Get around. Also, before I plug my dates, I want to plug something else. On Friday, December 1st, Gwen Sunkel's new comedy special drops on YouTube. Two-person job. Yes. Gwen is a friend of the podcast, and I'm excited to see it because I've not gotten to see Gwen that much in the last year or so or two. So I think there's going to be a bunch of stuff on the special that I don't know.
Yeah.
This is her second special. She had a pretty quick turnaround from the first one. So she's been working. She's been grinding and getting those bits worked out, and I'm excited to see it. And I believe that is a 4x3 production, right?
Your
homies. All
right. It is. I believe it's her first special. She just did an album. So,
oh, okay. So first special, but second hour of material maybe or something.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that'll be very exciting. Check that out on Friday, December 1st on YouTube. That's our recommendation for today. That's our this motherfucker. we haven't been doing that enough. We really need to bring back the this motherfucker of the week.
We apologize, and, everybody.
Like, this motherfucker of the week is Gwen Sunkel doing it up, dropping her first special on YouTube on December 1st. All right, now back to me. I've got some shows coming up this weekend. Thursday on the 30th, I got two shows in Chicago, House of Blues at 7 p.m. and High Dive at 8 p.m. Those are both short sets. Just going to come in, have some fun, get loose with it.
That's a good night. That's a good Chicago night. I love those places.
double dip on both of those and have a good time. And then December 1st and 2nd, I'm doing a couple of Wisconsin Don't Tells. December 1st, I'll be in Appleton, Wisconsin, doing Don't Tell. And on Saturday the 2nd, I'll be in Green Bay, Wisconsin, doing a Don't Tell. Yeah, one thing I do want to say in advance, looking out forward, is speaking of Don't Tells, the next Bloomington Don't Tell will be on the 7th. I will not be there. So if you're tired of watching me host the Bloomington ones, don't worry. Somebody else will be there, taking care of business. I can't say who, but somebody will be. But we snagged a headliner who's touring through from the West Coast that regularly opens for Patton Oswalt and Brian Posehn and has done all kinds of cool stuff. So you don't want to miss that. And tickets are on sale right now on the Don't Tell website for Bloomington. Those are all the dates. Are we ready to get into the question?
I'm ready now. Let's get it.
All right. Question of the week comes to us from John Handcuff, friend of the podcast. Thank you, John, for sending in another question. Do appreciate that. It says, hey, period, which is his trademark. People mm-hmm. that don't know John, he's like a very monotone. Hey, that's his catchphrase. That's his get her done.
He should work on that. I know it's his and it always will be, but
you don't think that that's a strong, solid launching an empire of comedy catchphrase?
Did you see the Into the Spider-Verse, the first one?
I did.
With Uncle Aaron, he's just like, hey.
Yeah.
And he ain't gonna be as cool like John, I love you, but he ain't gonna be as cool as Uncle Aaron.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, from Into the Spider-Verse. When someone takes your shit, you gotta move on.
Oh, so you're saying that Into the Spider-Verse, the writers were big fans of Handcuffs, and they just like sexied it up with the casting.
And they didn't give my man no royalties or nothing.
No.
So yeah. John's more of a hello looking guy anyway.
So do you think that
hello and a wave?
Like a big friendly
hey neighbor.
Neighbor. Yeah. Okay. All right. So John, thanks for sending in a question. I'm glad we could like deconstruct your entire thing and make some suggestions on new things for you to do.
You said also you wanted advice. You got advice.
You got advice that you didn't know you were gonna get. All right. His email says, hey, me again, loving the podcast. Thank you. Hopefully you're still loving the podcast after the last 60 seconds. Here's the question. Which artist from outside the world of stand-up has had the biggest impact on your approach to doing comedy? Thanks! John. This is a great question because, yes, stand-ups influence stand-ups, but so much more, I think, gets into who we are and our senses of humor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we talked about Dr. Demento early on, right? There was some stand-up on Dr. Demento every now and then, but it was mostly funny songs and skits and like, here's a Monty Python thing.
Right.
That stuff I think is foundational to our sense of humor growing up. And I think that never goes away. I think, you know, you continue to read, you know, books that are more humorous that aren't necessarily, you know, like I know Dilbert was a big influence on you. And so, you know, those comic strips
got
all the books. I can see it in the back. I see the corner of one of the books there in the background of your Zoom.
This is Dilbert. This is Garfield.
But I do think there are things that influence us, you know, in ways outside of just normal stand-up. So do you have someone that you can think of? Like I actually know one of yours.
You do?
I know. Yes. I know that like Bruce Lee is foundational to the way that you approach life. And I think that you have taken his philosophies and applied it to your comedy, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
Yeah. I think more specifically to that point of Bruce Lee and staying flexible mentally, staying open to everything happening in the world and becoming kind of a student in what's happening around you was like really I don't know why, but when I was in middle school, that like blew my mind to think that way, to be able to like
to be like water, to
be like water, change your opinion, be open to it. I like that. Like obviously Bruce Lee, and he was just like kind of a badass, just like I really was obsessed with James Baldwin, and I think the way that he relayed racial strife in a digestible way for a lot of people really made me rethink of, like, just, you know, black versus white, or, you know, made me think more of a, on a global scale and more on a deeper, it made me, like, kind of research more on my own. And I think when I talk about race on stage, it has to have a little bit more than black people do this and white people do this.
Well, you can't do that because Baldwin, that was his first big book, was, it was. Black people do this.
White and they wouldn't black people be like there goes my ring light again. My ring light did not appreciate that.
That's the ghost of James Baldwin just knocking. I really wish I would have gotten my Bruce Lee joke in before you went into James Baldwin talking about racial strife, because I'm gonna say another way that Bruce Lee really influenced you is he also married a white woman, and you're like, that's for me. And yeah, you know, and then you went straight into, like, the James Baldwin racial strife. So I was like, I don't think I can jam this in now.
Yeah, now we have to re-edit this so that that joke gets put in the right spot.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
This ring light is not up for this conversation.
Getting wild, yeah.
I know. But yeah, man, I like those two people. And then obviously it's a tough question, because I probably, like you as well, was obsessive with comedy in the same way that I was, like, obsessed with music. And even to this day, I think, you know, those are still influences, Baldwin and Bruce Lee. But, like, I listen to a lot of Black Thought. I love the way, I'm going to get his book for Christmas. I've already asked for it. The Upcycled Self. I think his story is really interesting. And he talks about not opening up his personal life until, you know, he turned 45. Mm-hmm. Like, he'd been rhyming and rapping since he was a teenager. And it was great, but I really am digging the stuff that's digging into his personal life. And I kind of feel the same way. Like, when I started comedy, it was very surface, and now I'm starting to enjoy digging, doing the harder work of, like, exploring myself and seeing how I can convey either painful situations or maybe things that I just didn't think were anything that are super relatable to people. So those are my three that are top of mind.
Those are great, man. I think, man, I wish I had ones that were as strong and not directly comedy related. You know, Dr. Demento was very foundational to me as a child, as was what little bits of Saturday Night Live I could watch when I would sneak out of my bedroom, right? And, like, my parents had fallen asleep on the couch. But I think other things that have really influenced me, I think, in comedy are, I'm a big fan of science fiction. And I still read quite a bit of science fiction to this day. And there are, you know, there's trash science fiction, which is just fun. But then there's, like, high-minded sort of social critique science fiction. And they do it through a parable. Like, we're talking about these alien races, but we're actually talking about racism in America, or we're talking about social inequality. You know, like, I'm a big fan of this series called The Expanse. And The Expanse really gets into exploited worker class and, like, really...
Yeah.
Real things. And I think because I've read so much of that, it has influenced the way that I'm going to write a joke that seems like it's about one thing, but it's about another thing, you know?
Love that. Or,
yeah. And I don't do that all the time. It's not like it's all the time, but, you know, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be a big topic like racism or social inequality. Although I do have jokes that touch on that kind of stuff. It can even just be about things like about the male ego. I'm not going to present it as it's like I'm talking about the delicate male ego, but the subtext of the joke, with myself usually as, like, the butt of the joke, is that idea of, like, our identity, our idea of masculinity is fucked, you know, like, it's just such a trap sometimes, you know. And so I think science fiction influenced me in that way, you know, to kind of think in parallel ways like that. I also, you know, I was such a big fan of lyricists and music growing up. I love punk rock, which traditionally doesn't have the greatest lyrics. It's very straightforward, it's not very poetic, you know, which is, there's something great about that too.
Yeah.
But you know, songwriters like Leonard Cohen or Tom Waits that had a much more lyrical, poetic kind of approach to language, I think made me think about the power of language mm-hmm. in a way that isn't maybe front of mind right. all the time, but it's woven into the DNA, you know? Yep. And so I think that those are, if I had to really kind of trace it back, I think those are the things that do show up in my comedy in very subtle, like behind the scenes ways.
Yeah.
You know, I get to see it in the joke. Usually. Right. But it's working in there, you know, for sure. So
I love that kind of misdirection sense. I think of, like, obviously I was into martial arts and boxing and stuff. I think of Ali and his mm-hmm. personality of, like, being this goofball. And then you're like, I'm going to listen to everything he has to say. And then he slides some real shit at you. And yeah. then he leads this very impactful life that he believes to be noble, mm-hmm. sticking up for what you believe in. It's the guy that's like, I'm the prettiest, I'm float like a, like he's rhyming, yeah. I'm like he's dancing around the ring, and then, you know, I'm not going to fight in Vietnam. Yeah. Like, this is,
he this seemed is a, like, yeah, the good, like the flash and showman mm-hmm. seems like this very, you know, petty, vain person,
right,
you know, who's a narcissist, but then like reveals all these depths to him, you know, and that, like, that was clearly an act, mm-hmm. you know, because like his life, you know, even while he was still boxing, but particularly post-boxing, was all in service to right. the community and to the Muslim community and to, like, the community in Louisville, his hometown, my hometown as well. Anyway, throw that out there. Me and Ali, basically the same.
Shout out to Louisville.
Yeah. You know, if I ever get an Olympic medal, I'm also throwing it in the Ohio River. You know what I'm saying?
This is what I think of this country. No, that, I think that's great, man. I think since we're both kind of storytelling comics, we kind of think in that way. It'd be interesting to have the perspective of someone who's like a one-liner, or like,
right.
because there are authors like Vonnegut or authors like Sedaris that probably have a greater impact on comics like that. Mm-hmm. I think we talk about this, like living a life that's outside of comedy, mm-hmm. even if you're not like, all right, I got to read to get inspired. Just, you know, doing stuff that you like informs the way that you think about life. And I think that is what informs your comedy. So
yes.
I'm super happy that John asked this question, because now it has me thinking about, like, what the hell did the Avengers, the last 20 Avengers movies inform my last album?
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. That Luke Cage shit.
Yeah. He did make an appearance.
He did.
you know, we've talked about this before on the podcast, but it bears repeating, like, comics, if you are looking for inspiration, you know, listen to the stand-up channels on SiriusXM and your friends' albums or albums you haven't heard, or, mm-hmm. you know, watch YouTube specials and, like, you know, whatever, like, but I think you get just as much, if not more, inspiration, at least I do, from other forms of entertainment that aren't stand-up, mm-hmm. because I'll watch stand-up in a somewhat analytical mode.
Yeah.
Yep. It's very rare for me to laugh at a stand-up set. Mm-hmm. If it's like over the top, ridiculous, goofy, like Brian Regan, usually yeah. that gets me. But it's usually more of like, ah, oh, that's great. That's a great bit. Oh, you know, I might laugh right. a little bit, but as far as like losing my shit laughing, yeah. like that has to come from like a movie or like a TV show, like that's just, you know, brilliantly written, like a mm-hmm. Ted Lasso or something, you know, like that shit inspires me way more to create than I think other stand-up does.
Right.
And it could be just because stand-up's been my life for 15 years now, you know, I'm over it.
I do not enjoy this.
I no longer enjoy this whatsoever. And I mean, no, but it is, you've seen so much stand-up that it's just like, oh, it's refreshing to me to watch, you know, I distinctly remember being in a hotel room on tour and watching, Young Never. Adult. No, yep. the movie Young Adult with
Frank
Oswalt and Charlize Theron. It's like from the woman who wrote Juno.
Yep.
It's like her next film. And it's so dark and so funny. And I just, like, it connected in my soul. Like, I think that movie inspired me to go out and create for like the next 3 months, because it was so, and I didn't create anything like it, I didn't go make a dark, weird movie, you know, about a terrible person, you know.
Yeah.
But there was just something about it just connected with me in a way that was like,
yeah. Man.
You know, and so I think that going to art museums is something else I like to do. Listening to music, you and I are both big music fans. Listening to music can also be inspiring. So definitely don't just, and this is the reason I'm spending so much time on this, is so many early comics in their first couple of years, because they become obsessed with it, that's all they do. They're always going out to shows, even if they're not on the shows. And like, yeah, go watch professional comedians on the weekend, see how it's done. But they're going to every single night, they're going out to an open mic to kind of grind it or whatever. It's like, no, man, take a night or two off, go to the movies with your non-comedian friends.
Right.
Go see a band play, do other shit to inform and feed your soul, and you will get better at comedy faster than if you're just at an open mic every night. And I 100% believe that. Yeah.
100%, man. Could not agree more. I to your point of like finding what inspires you, it is tough, even if you're new, to not look at everything in that analytical sense. Like, I know that like last night I watched the Beth Selling special finally. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I love watching Beth. I'm gonna watch the Birbiglia special that just mm-hmm. came out, because it's its own thing. Birbiglia is his own thing, and that's kind of energizing to me. And anytime Bamford puts something out, I'm gonna watch that. Like,
yeah.
So I know I'm not watching a ton of stand up because I'm around stand up all the time, but there are people that still like, I gotta see this. Ray Wood Jr. Like, I gotta see the top of the heap. I will say, like, to avoid burnout, especially if you're new and you're trying to move up, just if you're going to the club to watch shows that you're not on, try to discern the difference between, all right, the host, the middle, and the headliner. What sets each person apart? Mm-hmm. And then that's the analytical sense you want to focus on, especially like, man, I'm trying to get to featuring, or I want this club to give me a shot at headlining. Mm-hmm. Look at what the headliner's doing. Look at what the feature's doing. Try to see the difference and see if you can, you know, implement any of those into your own act. But
yeah.
I think just, you can't turn comedy off, but it can't be the only thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And it should be super analytical. You should be obsessed with it at the beginning. It really should be like an illness. If you can't not do this, don't do it. Right. Like, cause it, like, most people don't make a living at it. Most people, and it's like a lot of heartbreak and a lot of kick in the nuts, you know, every bad set and getting turned down is, you know, we hear no all the time at every level. And so, but if you are obsessed with it, if it is like you just can't not do this, you know, like you got to do it. Then the analytical aspect of it should be first and foremost. Don't be a social club, you know, like there's, like, yes, you can be social and have friends in comedy, but there are definitely comics who come into it, and the main reason they're into comedy is because, oh, I now have an instant friend group.
Right.
It's like, cool, great. And if you're in your early 20s, I understand that, you know, that's your version of going to college or working in a place for the first time and getting to meet actual other people. But it cannot just be that, you know, so many times you see the young comics or just even older comics, they aren't watching the show. They're out front smoking and talking with all the other comics.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like there was a club that I used to do regularly. I'll just say it. The Caravan in Louisville, I used to headline it once a year. And I was always amazed, even before I moved up to headlining, when I was featuring, like, local comics, if they came to the weekend shows, they sat in the front bar and just bullshitted with each other.
Yeah.
And it's like, they've seen each other and I'm not saying they need to learn something from me. But it's like, you can't learn nothing from Sean Latham. You can't hear how hard he's destroying.
Right.
I mean, I opened for Sean there. I featured for Sean there one time. And he had the strongest first 10 minutes of a set I think I've ever seen on a comedian.
Yeah. Like,
every show, that first 10 minutes, murder. And I mean, the rest of his shit was good too. But it was like so fucking raucous. And like, did any of them come in from the bar to watch?
Nope. Nuts.
There's That's nothing. And it's like, oh, fuck, I need to go see what the fuck is going on in there. Maybe I can learn something. No. So if you are, and that's not to denigrate the entire Louisville comedy scene. There's some really great comics in Louisville, but like back in that time.
And what we heard and what I heard, none of y'all are doing shit. You don't care.
But back in that time, and
you ain't Muhammad Ali.
You still see it today. You know, like, here's the thing is, like, I don't think you see it as much with the attic because it's hard to go outside and smoke at the attic. It's upstairs. Yeah. It's weird. It's very obvious when you come back into the room, mm-hmm. right? You can't just sneak out. You can't just be out hanging out. Like, but there are other clubs where people are like in the front bar area instead of watching the show. And I'm not saying you got to watch all the show all the time, but that social aspect of it should be secondary to the craft.
Yeah.
And so be present. You better be present and not think that you can't learn something from other comedians, because that's the other, that's where that shit comes from.
Right.
It's like, oh, I'm already good. Well, if you're as great as you thought you were, you'd be booked right now at another place and performing on stage right now instead of just hanging
word
out, you know.
Word. Yeah.
Talking 100%. Shit with the same comics that you talk shit with every weekend, you know.
100%,
so,
man.
Yeah. So be obsessed, but also take in other interests in life. I think that's I think every third episode we get into this, but it's important, you know?
Yeah, it's important. I think, thank you, John, for sending in that question. That was brilliant. It really got my juices flowing.
And John, let us know how the hello and big wave works for you from now on. Since
I think it's going to work.
Dwight has told you that you're no longer allowed to go, hey, let us know how this new thing. What about howdy? Well, do you think he can pull off a howdy?
I think he can pull off a howdy. Because if he sticks with the hey, then he's just appropriating a black Spider-Man. And we don't want that for your life, John. We want people not to get canceled. Let us help you. Howdy, neighbor. With a big wave.
Yep. Stay in your lane, John, is what Dwight's saying. Dwight's saying that howdy, neighbor, is the only appropriate greeting for a white man.
It is. It has to be.
Yep, that's why I love to see Michael Rappaport just say howdy, neighbor. Like, I love it when he does it.
Oh yeah, he's like, howdy, y'all motherfuckers finally ready to laugh.
Oh man. Well, I think that just about does it for this episode of the podcast. I think we got into some interesting territory there. Got a little behind the scenes on Bob and Tom, which I thought was interesting. We've never really delved into it that much, but I think we could probably dedicate another episode to just that, like the process. I'm not one of the writers for Bob and Tom, but I have been on the road with you and with Brent when you've had to, like, they send out the list. Here's the news stories. Yeah. And you're just going through it, trying to figure out jokes. And like, I think it's a pretty fascinating process. So maybe we can talk about that in a future episode, if you're okay with it.
We'll see. The mood had to be right. No love lost here.
Okay. Yeah. What day do you get paid on for that stuff? And then we'll do the episode that day when you get the check. And then
it should be tomorrow. I don't know. Should be tomorrow.
Maybe that's to catch you on a day when you get paid for the show. And then we'll be like,
I'll be even more mad at how little money it is.
Okay. Never mind.
I'll be fired up.
I take it all back. All right, everybody. Dwight has already mentioned it once, but yeah, if you don't mind, rate and review the podcast. That helps. I mean, I know we broke into like the top 100 for a minute or something.
For
a minute. Yeah, yep. That's exciting. Sorry. You know, it's two nobodies from the Midwest, you know, just trying to figure it out. I did want to do the transparency and like kind of keep people up to date on how my social media thing is going, because I wanted to let people know the results on these things.
Uh-huh.
Right. So once a week, I have been purchasing promotion on, wait, sorry, it brought it up. So on TikTok, I've been promoting one clip a week, kind of dedicating basically like $20 at it, throwing $20 bucks at it, right? The clip that I decided to do this week was a clip of the podcast.
Nice.
And I tagged you in it. Hopefully I did that correctly. And it was actually less than $20, because the more you do it, also, they give you these discount codes.
Right.
Like, the more you do it, they'll give you a 15% off your next one and whatever. So it pays to kind of do it consistently. You know, I think it was to get 2,000 views, and that clip wound up getting 2,682. So it's not like it did great.
Okay.
Or anything. It didn't take off. The last time that I did the same sort of level, which I think, I don't even think it's $20. I think it's like $13 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I tried this, that stand-up clip got 3,367. But I am seeing residual aspects of it, which it seems like other clips of mine are getting viewed now more regularly than they had been, older clips and things like that. So it is pushing some other stuff out to these people, you know, that whether it's people who like the clip or just they saw it and watched enough of it, the algorithm is like, all right, we'll throw another one of yours in. So you do get some peripheral benefit from it as well.
Oh, dope. Right on.
At least from the way that I can sort of track it. I'm going to do another one. I might bump it up a little bit because I've actually figured out how to do beyond their just their set. They have like three set levels, but you can actually set. You can actually customize. I'd customize and do a daily level and all that kind of stuff. So
quick logistical question. Are you setting your own audience or are you letting TikTok choose your own audience?
I just let TikTok choose it because I was going with these preset packages, which you don't get to set the audience.
Right.
Today I was getting into the more customizable version where you get to set your own audience. So I've not done that yet.
Yeah.
I don't know what obviously if it's a clip that is trying to move tickets, right? Like if I'm going to be pushing the New Year's Eve shows, which I'll probably do that. I'll do promotions for that. Then selecting the audience, I'm assuming select the audience, you can do geographic as well.
Right.
Yeah. So then I'll target it, you know, but for these, I haven't been doing it. So,
yeah. So I think that's a big differentiation of once you like narrow your focus, you're obviously going to be drawing out of a smaller pool. So, but the quality of the views you get, the click-through rate should go up. So when you're trying to like sell tickets versus trying to just expand reach, which is both things are important, you know, I think it's a great experiment and I'm excited to see what happens. Like it's this algorithm, quote unquote, is always changing. So I think it's a good experiment to do as like a learning exercise.
I think so too. And, you know, we've talked about, you mentioned it too, like people should get in on this while the price is still cheap.
Yeah.
Because we went through this whole thing where Facebook was super cheap for a while, and then they jacked it up. TikTok is very affordable. Like I said, I think I've spent $13 each week the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And again, nothing is going bonkers crazy yet, but it might. And it's like it's literally two cups of coffee at Starbucks, you know, to try it. And so, as I said, the more you do it, the more discount codes they give you too. So you can go up a level and still wind up only spending $13 because you get the discount code. So I encourage all the comics listening, give it a try. You know, it's not a big investment, you know, see if it works for you, you know.
Yep.
But anyway, so I just wanted to, I should have thought of that earlier on. I know we were already saying the goodbye, but it's important. I wanted to keep reporting on this every week, like how things are going.
I love
with
that.
This, so.
Y'all got a little PS from Matt. And
this is a little mid-credits bonus scene, you know. and finally, for the music reference, I know you already talked about Black Thought, but I listened to the new Dolly Parton Rockstar album on my drive back yesterday.
Baby.
Ooh, it is bad. It is.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I love Dolly, but man, it's karaoke. Like
is it really?
The arrangements are spot on from the original versions of the song. Like she doesn't fucking change anything up. It's like literally just like, well, if you just wanted to hear what she would sound like doing that song at karaoke, now you know.
No. Oh, she didn't even like re-release, or she didn't do the Taylor Swift thing. I mean, she did, but she was like, what if I made it at like 77?
Right. What if I, he's like, what if I made it like change the arrangements and mix things up a little bit? It's so straight on. I mean, it sounds Heart of Glass with her and Debbie.
Man.
That's the other thing is she has a lot of the lead singers of the bands of the song she's covering on it with her.
Oh God.
Like, so they're either duetting or like taking turns, and it's just like, well, now it's totally sounds like karaoke now.
It's just
the wildest thing. I love Dolly. She's amazing. One of the best human beings obviously to ever live, but this ain't it.
Man, we got to get that Andre 3000 Dolly Parton collab and just see what happens.
Yeah, I'm just glad that
she's
singing
over the flute.
Horribly disappointed with albums that we were like, oh, it should be pretty good.
It's a sad existence. Maybe AI should take over creative control. I don't know what's happening.
Maybe AI did. This Dolly Parton album sounds like AI did do it.
Oh, man. Thank you guys for listening. Please, as Matt said, leave us a review, send a question. I'm full of tryptophan. I will stab you with a fork if you do not do so.